The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. Today on the Pazcast, we bring back the former head writer of the WWF and WCW, former WCW heavyweight champion, Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, what's going on? How you doing?
What is going on, John? How you doing today, my friend?
Doing pretty good. A lot of Vince news, Vince McMahon news going on. Crazy.
Pandora's box, bro. It only takes one. I mean, it only takes one. You know, it's funny. I was watching a documentary on Weinstein the other day, and you know, bro, everybody in Hollywood knew what was going on, and nobody was saying a word. People that worked for him, CAA, everybody. Well, what happened, bro, was he flew in this model from Italy, and this model from Italy met with him, and he did his business with the robe and the massage and the whole nine yards. Okay, now, bro, this model from Italy, she already had a career, so she wasn't one of these young Hollywood actresses, you know. So when this happened, bro, she went to the police. She went to the NYPD, and then they started investigating it, and that opened up the Pandora's box. And it's very similar here, bro, because, you know, supposedly the origins of the Vince story was it was a friend of the person who got the NDA. And, you know, again, bro, I talked about this when it happens. All it takes is one, bro, one. And, John, I swear, in the business, bro, I am not BSing you. I've had four women in the business, three workers, one producer, basically tell me stories of their sexual harassment. And you know how the business is, bro. Nobody will come forward because they're going to be blackballed from the business. It's going to be their word against Vince's and all that stuff. But now, you know, something like this gives them the opportunity to come forward. So you just don't know, man, how many people are out there. You just don't know.
Seems like this is the tip of the iceberg with some of these stories, because it was like four women, $12 million. It's like, if that's what happened recently, I want to keep going back and see what else is out there.
Yeah, I mean, we go back to, you know, the 80s with the female referee.
Yeah, Rita Chitteron, Rita. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to the 80s, bro. So, like, what happened in the 90s? And, you know, I mean, yeah, bro.
Crazy, but I know. I guess he's paid a lot of money, hopefully out of his own account, not WWE's account. So, right?
Yeah.
You hope.
Yeah, but even if he has, bro, and he probably did, because I don't think Vince McMahon is that stupid. But man, bro, what a horrible look. Because a non-disclosure, basically, bro, like, that's hush money. Yeah. So, like, you know, why hush money, Vince? Why couldn't, if it was all consensual, then why couldn't you have a relationship with one of these? You know what I'm saying, bro? It's so corny. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, bro. It's so corny. There are men in Vince's position that have, you know, legitimate relationships and date, you know, the problem is, though, you see what happens, John, is it becomes a lie on top of a lie on top of a lie. When I brought Bruce Pritchard back into TNA, I think it was 2011-ish. Bro, Bruce told me Linda and Vince haven't been together for years. 4 years. So, you know, my thing is, okay, like, why is that a secret? So now the fact that that is a secret, everything else has to be a secret. And, bro, yep. All you got to do at some point is pull one string. And then boom, you know, but the fact that they haven't been together for years, but it was a secret and nobody could know about it, because that makes it look worse for Vince, because now all of these things look like affairs when in fact he hasn't been with Linda. But the fact that he kept that a secret, now it makes it look really worse. That's the one thing, John, about me and these shows and everything else. Bro, I don't lie about crap, man. There's nothing I lie about. A lot of times, bro, I'll incriminate myself. I'll take the responsibility. But once you start piling up those lies, bro, it, like I said, it's one string and then the whole house collapses, man.
Seems like, yeah, like they haven't been together in forever. So it's not really, people were saying affair, not really together. It seems like they've been separated for a while, like even a long, long while.
Bruce was making it sound to me, bro, like I left the WWE in 1999. I mean, Bruce was making it sound to me like it was years, man. It didn't just happen. I mean, they've been apart for years, you know, and, even when I was at Vince's house, I used to go to Vince's house weekly. You know, once in a while, Linda would be there. And, bro, it wasn't a husband-wife relationship. I mean, it wasn't. It was very cold. It was very business-like. I mean, like something wasn't right about it. But that's the thing, man. If you haven't been together, I don't get why that is a secret. Is that going to affect your company? Is that going to affect shareholders? Like, I don't understand why that would have to be a secret.
Strange. Yeah, very, very strange.
Yeah.
But let's get into the topic at hand. WWF Survivor Series 1998, which was back on November 15th, St. Louis, Missouri, at the Kiel Center. The attendance, 21,179. The buy rate was over 400,000. Of course, it was called Deadly Game. 400,000, it's good. Obviously, nowadays, it would be tremendous. It would be great. But remember the last time we spoke, SummerSlam was 700,000. So, I mean, it is down. Is that normal, though, you think, for Survivor Series?
I think, bro, there was always the big four. You know what I mean? And the concentration always went in the big four. That would be WrestleMania, Survivor Series, SummerSlam, and what was it? What was the other?
Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble. Yeah, so those big four always drew more. Bro, I really think, I mean, to be honest with you, we knew the big four were always going to draw. You know, bro, people forget. Pay-per-views were $50 back then. You know, I mean, you couldn't necessarily afford to buy every single one. And then, bro, on top of that, I'm not sure exactly where WCW was at this point, but obviously they were doing well. So, bro, at the end of the month, if I'm a kid and I love wrestling, bro, my parents ain't shelling out $100. So I think a lot of times, bro, a decision had to be made. Want to get the WWE pay-per-view or you want to get the WCW pay-per-view? That's why, you know, like I really think those pay-per-view numbers depended on, you know, what was really, really hot at the time. That's why you got freaking Tony Khan tooting his horn with 125,000 buys. And it's like, bro, there's no other wrestling pay-per-view to buy. Like, yours is the only pay-per-view. People aren't choosing, oh my God, bro, WWE is doing this month and AEW is doing this, and which one are we going to pick? We had to deal with that, bro. So it was just a much, much different structure back then, John.
Yeah, World War III was in 98, and you know that does pretty good. But obviously, you guys are the main show with SummerSlam. But the month before was their Halloween Havoc, which obviously did, I think, 500,000 buys. You had Hogan with the Return of the Warrior and that whole thing. So, I mean, people probably spent so much money at WCW. It's like, can we? But, you know, you got a flip-flop. Yeah.
You know, bro, it's so funny because when you read about the, of course, the narrative with me going to WCW, okay, bro, they will, you know, bro, you got to understand, one of the reasons I left WWE was I really felt, John, like we had done everything we could. I really felt. So then, bro, I was looking at WCW as a challenge. Can you do this all over again without having to work under Vince? So, bro, when I started writing for WWE, it was in the shitter, okay? Because of the work Ed Ferrara and I had done at WWE. So they always criticized me, bro, for those early WCW buy rates. Yeah, bro, their buy rates were the shits because everybody was getting the WWE pay-per-views because that is what we built up, and now everybody was choosing WWE over WCW. Again, bro, pay-per-views were expensive, and I bet you there was a lot of families that told kids, pick one. They weren't shelling out over $100 every month for wrestling.
Yep. And if you want to get the ECW pay-per-view, you throw in some more money. You know what I mean? So
absolutely, bro. Absolutely.
There were some choices to be made. No doubt about it. I just want to mention just a few matches from Sunday Night Heat before we get into the actual pay-per-view. Too much. Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor defeated the Hardy Boys. The Job Squad, Bob Holly and Scorpio, defeated LOD, Animal and Draws. Val Venus defeated Tiger Ali Singh with Babu. And Gangrel with Christian and Edge defeated Steve Blackman. Those are your Heat matches. They're all short and sweet. Some pretty good names on there, though, for Sunday Night Heat. Did make it to the pay-per-view, right?
Yeah, nice. Especially, man. You know, I just look at those names and, like, they'd be at the top of the card today, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is obviously when Edge and Christian are with the Brood. They're not really doing their thing, but they're getting out there with Gangrel. Did you see like something in like more than Edge or Christian, or did you think like, oh, Gangrel is going to kind of carry these guys while they're maturing in the business?
I just kind of thought I thought Edge was the guy. I just really did, bro, because Edge was cool. Like that was really the difference. There are a lot of similarities between Edge and Christian, but bro, to me, for whatever reason, Edge was always the cool guy. That's why the original plan for Edge was to be very mysterious. That's why you had the woman do the voiceover. I didn't want him talking at the beginning because I wanted him to be like kind of this enigma. But, you know, I love David Heath. You know, I love him to death, bro. But I always felt back then that Edge was the guy.
Great theme music. Brood, Gangrel. Yes.
And that entrance too, bro. I mean, that's all TV. I mean, I had nothing to do with that. What a great entrance. What great music by Jim Johnson. The whole package was awesome.
Funny, like we talked about last time, but too much. They defeated LOD in a pre-match. Now they're defeating the Hardy Boys. If you just look at the resume, it's like, wow, too much. Scott Taylor Brian Christopher have some nice wins on the old resume there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, bro, they were workhorses, man. They were great workers. Brian Christopher had great character, man. I don't think he's recognized for what a great character he was and what a great entertainer. He's never in the conversation. Bro, this guy, you know, Jerry Lawler was his dad, man. This was in his blood. He got it, man. He got an education. And, you know, as I go back and I look at the Attitude Era years, man, bro, he was very, very entertaining.
What did you think about him like backstage? Was he like a malcontent at all? Was he crazy? Like, because you know, you always hear stories of when he was younger, like, oh, he's a party animal and you know, this and
not,
that.
Not at work, bro. Not at work. It was yes, sir, no, sir. Never had an issue with the guy ever.
Did he always and his dad like have a good relationship or was it kind of hidden, like, because you didn't really hear about them being
it was kind of hidden, bro. But I think what it was like they were at work, you know what I'm saying? And Jerry is really a professional, and I'm sure a lot of that rubbed off on Brian. Like, you would have never in a million years known they were father and son by the way they carried each other, like behind the scenes. But I really just think that had to do with them separating the business from the personal.
I always thought it was funny, like, they almost didn't say he was a son. You know what I mean? Like, he's Brian Christopher. He's not Brian Law. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't always bring him up as Jerry's kid.
Yeah, and that was the running theme, bro. They were the announcers. JR was saying, yes, that's your kid, and he was ignoring it, bro. That was the whole running theme.
What? Any reason? Like, did he not want to be Lawler, like Brian Lawler, or?
I honestly don't know what was the reasoning behind it. I would think, bro, it was a rib, because probably early on they were trying to kayfabe that Brian Christopher was Jerry Lawler's son. I'm sure they were trying to kayfabe that to some extent, especially at USWA. So I think by the time it got to WWE, it really turned into more of a rib.
With this time period, are you guys comfortable with where you're at? Because it seems like WCW is slowly, you know, losing momentum. You guys are really starting to pick up momentum. Are you happy creatively where you guys are at,
bro,
right now?
I'm always going to be happy creatively when I just know we're writing the best shows. Like, honestly, bro, it's just like, you know, sports. You know, I don't have any control over what they do. I don't have any control over their creative. I don't have any control over their checkbook and who they're bringing in. I've got no control over that. The only thing I have control over is, you know, our show and just making it the best I possibly can on a weekly basis. That's it. So I didn't fret about what they were doing ever. I had no control over that.
So leading into this show, I mean, obviously you guys are starting to kick ass in the ratings, but The Rock is going to kind of turn babyface a bit. Remember we talked about SummerSlam, he was starting to get over, the crowd's really starting to get behind him. He starts turning babyface. How, like, further in advance did you think, like, okay, we're going to pretend he's turning babyface, and it's really going to be like the boom, this event's really going to be the big turning point for him where he's really going to become a main eventer?
You know, bro, it's hard to say, John, because it's really a feel, man. It's really a feel. I got my I got my best feel, bro, because you gotta understand, during this time, nobody knew who Vince Russo was. I wasn't a character on TV. You know, nobody knew who I was. And one of the most important things I used to be able to do, John, is get out in the crowd. Like, those are the real fans. That's the real measuring stick. And you just get a feel, man. You know when it's somebody's time. You know when it's time to give them what they want. You know when it's time to pull the rug out from under them. I mean, really being in the arena with the people just really, really gave me an advantage. And, you know, by the time I went to WCW and I was an on-air character, like, I couldn't do that anymore. Then I went to TNA. I couldn't do that anymore. But that was such a great, great, great tool for me to have, bro, to really get in the people and feel that vibe.
Was it important to turn him face first, get people to like him, so that when the heel turn comes and he joins the corporation, they really, really hate him? Like, wow, tricked us, you asshole, you know?
Nah, bro, because I don't think we turned him heel. I don't think we turned him face. The people turned them face. I mean, that's exactly what happened. I don't think it's anything we wrote. I don't think it was a direction we were going in. We were just trying to stay true to the character. The people really turned him babyface. And with us staying true to that character, yeah, bro, he's going to take a huge payoff to join the corporation. Like, that's who that character was. He was all about himself. You could tell by the way he dressed. You know, money was very important and material things were very important. So yeah, bro, he's gonna take a payday when he had the opportunity. So I don't feel that we did anything to turn a baby face.
Just talking to the Godfather, just had him on for an interview, and we were talking about, you know, his character and stuff, and he would say it's like you guys, Russo and Ferrara obviously, would just kind of like let him be and like
just
and
go with it.
Right.
That's what's missing today, bro. Organic. Organic, organic. You just got to go with it. That's where Eric and I used to, you know, butt heads all the time. Eric had this thing, you know, because Eric was a big television mark. He had this thing with arcs and Bibles, and you had to know where you were going in the next 3 to 6 months. And Eric loves to tell the story of Vince Russo used to have an idea. And when I would ask him where it was going, he would have the deer in the headlights look. Yeah, bro, because I didn't necessarily know where it was going. It was organic, bro. And that's the thing. So I would throw it out there. I would get the feel for the audience, the live crowd. I would study the ratings. And now, bro, literally what's controlling that? The fans. The fans are controlling their reaction in the arena. The fans are controlling the ratings, what they want and what they don't want. So once I got something started, bro, I organically went with it. I didn't have something etched in stone for the next 3 months. I would never work that way, especially, John, in wrestling. People are going to get hurt. There's going to be contract disputes. You can't. The notion of planning wrestling 3 to 6 months in advance is freaking ridiculous, bro, because of the intangibles. You are forced to change this up every single week. Somebody's always going to get hurt, bro. Somebody's going to be in the doghouse. Somebody's going to have contract negotiations. I mean, it is constantly, you know, working through these minefields. And if you sit down and write for 3 to 6 months, it's a massive waste of time. That's where Eric and I really didn't get along at TNA. We need to put together a Bible of where these characters are going in the next 6 months. Why am I going to do that if Rock blows out his knee next week? So I'm going to sit here and waste all that valuable time, and every single thing we come up with is going to change. It's nonsense, bro, and it doesn't work that way.
Seems like Rock Austin is destined for WrestleMania, which is a few months down. Do you guys have that mapped out, though? Like, hopefully Rock Austin? Because
bro, nothing was mapped out. The only thing we would know is, especially WrestleMania, this is the match. This is where we want to be. That's it, bro. Like we probably knew at this point we want Rock and Austin, but we don't have it laid out for 3 months. We just know this is where we want to be by the time we get to WrestleMania. That's pretty much all we know, bro.
Who decides that? You, Ferrara, and Vince, or Vince is kind of deciding that to you, like, hey, we want Rock Austin.
You know, again, Johnny, like it kind of organically happens. I don't think anybody really decides it, but as we're going along, you just know, okay, bro, by the time we get to WrestleMania, it's going to be Rock and Austin. You just know that. Bro, that's the thing that I hate about wrestling, the push. There's no freaking push, bro. There was no push when I was writing. The fans were dictating who they wanted, who wasn't getting over, and we were going with exactly what they were telling us. There was no push. I didn't have favor for Rock over anybody or Austin for anybody. And that's what's missing freaking today, bro. Nothing is happening organically. Nothing.
So Austin is the big star, obviously, at this point. But is this one of the things where you want to put some roadblocks on his way, you know, like to chase the title? You know, keep Vince obviously as the top heel, create that heel heat, but give him a bunch of roadblocks like, okay, Austin's going to win the tournament. Whoa, he's not going to win. You don't need like that kind of thing.
Absolutely, bro, to get you more and more and more and more behind him. And again, bro, that would have been the reality. That's what Vince McMahon, the character, would have done. And that's exactly the way Steve Austin would have reacted.
How is Vince at this point just backstage? Like, you know, we're talking before about all this crazy stuff going on. Any like sort of controversies or anything backstage, or is blow ups or anything here in 98?
NDAs, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
No, bro, nothing, man. No, bro, I swear to God, like, you know, again, bro, people just have their freaking narrative and they want to believe whatever they want to believe. Bro, I got to tell you, John, I love Dixie Carter. I would never say an ill thing about the woman, but I'm talking about business now, okay? John, as the writer and the producer, and Jeff Jarrett was this way too. Jeff was this way. Dixie was this way. Bro, when they were on the show, they drove you freaking crazy because it was all about what they were doing and their promo. They drove me freaking crazy, especially Dixie. She made it like, I'm talking about behind the scenes now. She made it so about her. And, you know, bro, I've got 30 characters I've got to worry about. I understand you're Dixie Carter. I got to worry about AJ Styles, you know, I got to worry about Samoa Joe. I got to worry about Kurt Angle. I can't spend all my time with you. Bro, I swear to God, producing Vince, he was probably the easiest person I ever produced. Bro, he never spent more time than anybody else. Whatever we wrote, he did. Like, I mean, it was really, really that simple. And he didn't make it freaking difficult where, oh, my God, Vince is on the show and I'm going to have to spend, you know, an hour with Vince. He was like one of the boys. It would be like giving Taker his stuff or giving Mick his stuff. And, you know, Vince just went with it. And I don't know, bro. I don't know if people would find that hard to believe or not. But my God, bro, he was one of the easiest talents to produce. Shane was much more, I don't want to say difficult to produce. Shane was not difficult to produce, but he really spent more time going over it and examining it and spending time with me. He spent about twice the amount of time that Vince did, because bro, with Vince, me and Ferrara gave him the scene. And he did the scene. I mean, and it was done and we went on to the next thing. I think because Vince realized what our job was and how much work we had to do and how many other talents we had to produce. I think Vince realized that, where I don't think Dixie did, bro. To this day, I don't think Dixie understood what went into producing the time. I don't think she understood any of that where Vince did. So Vince always knew that time was very, very valuable.
So leading into the pay-per-views, there's a couple of in-your-house pay-per-views, Judgment Day, etc., where basically Austin is champ, but then he loses to Kane and Undertaker. They both pin him, so you don't really know who the champ is. That is a thing that, you know, as a fan, you're just interested. You're like, okay, what the hell's going on here? As far as, like, Austin comes out with the Zamboni, what are they going to do with the title? Like, I mean, there were so many good things that you guys did on Raw to keep everybody hooked. So it was like, wait, who the hell's the champ? Then they do Undertaker versus Kane with Austin as the ref. Austin lays them both out, so there's still no champion. So it's one of the things where it's a good storyline device, and it's obviously on creative and booking it, where you don't necessarily know who the champion is, but you're so intrigued as a fan, you keep watching because you're like, all right, what the hell's going on? Austin's not champ, but Undertaker's not champ, but Kane's not champ. Vince is giving that weird, like, middle finger thing that he does. Remember, he's like, it's all crooked. And
yeah.
He takes the belt from Austin, gives him the finger, like, screw you, you're not champion anymore. It was all about Austin and Vince and that feud, but it was so interesting because as a fan, you're like, where the hell are you guys going with this? You know,
bro, I swear to God, I got hooked on a show. I got hooked on a show recently and I binge watched it. And it actually started in 2013 called The Blacklist with James Spader. I just binge watched like all 9 episodes, bro. The beautiful thing about this show is every single week, there's a plot line, there's a twist, there's swerves, there's this, there's that. But bro, this show has been going on for 9 years. And from the very first year, the underlining storyline is we don't know James Spader's true identity. We don't know who he really is. He doesn't say who he really is. We don't know. Bro, they've been doing that for 9 years. So the beauty of it is every week there's something fresh. But after 9 years, you've still got the same story going where, like, you've got people watching for 9 years like, who the F is he? And that's the beauty of it, bro. And I think that's what we were trying to do here. You know, bro, people talk a lot about must-see TV. Bro, you must see it. You must see you. And bro, what that is writing. That is keeping people at the edge of their seat. That is the viewer not knowing where you're going. They think you're going right. You're going left. Holy shit. You got to be kidding me. That's what must see TV is. It takes writers to create that. Okay, Vince McMahon is not a television writer. Tony Khan is certainly not a television writer. He is a wrestling booker. Oh, this guy against this guy would be a great match. Yeah, oh yeah, bro, exactly. And the only people that are going to watch your show are wrestling fans. Nobody else is going to watch it. There's a real art, bro, to cliffhangers and must-see TV and suspense. And that's what's lacking today, bro.
Yeah, it just seems like at this point, it's like, okay, you can't miss a week because something is going on. I mean, that, yep. Right? That's the key. You can't absolutely miss it. It's not like, okay, I'll turn into the show three weeks later, same thing going on.
John, every story was getting progressed every week. There was a natural progression to every story. It was like a soap opera. Soap operas took forever, but it was always progressing. Now, you're just seeing the same thing week after week after week. Nothing, the story never progresses anymore.
Yep, very true. So as the actual pay-per-view starts, the opening match is going to be Mankind against a mystery opponent. Vince comes out hilariously. You know, he's got that the hardcore belt, really kind of before the hardcore belt. They're going to introduce that thing too, which is pretty funny, like that. Which I thought it was the belt at Perfect Smash. Apparently it's not, but it looked like the belt Perfect Smash, the Winged Eagle from Hulk Hogan back in Saturday night's main event. But Vince makes this big announcement that Mankind's going to get this mystery opponent, how great this guy is. Very grandiose. Like, oh, this guy did this. He's San Diego Chargers. All this other stuff. Ends up being Dwayne Gill. Very, very funny
stuff. You know, bro, I didn't remember, but as you're saying that, I'm thinking to myself, it's going to be Gilbert. Yeah, it's
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And see, bro, that's the beauty. Bro, the beauty of it is when you have characters. And Mick Foley is a lovable, comedic character who could turn violent on you in a drop of a hat. You can do stuff like that, bro. It's going to be funny. It's going to be entertaining because of the character and the way the character was crafted.
And he somehow looked more deranged with the shaved face and like the clean hair. Cause remember, he was trying to be corporate.
Yes.
Like he looked crazier with being cleaned up.
Yeah. What a once in a lifetime performer. I mean, to play three characters at one time with so many different levels of emotion. I mean, bro, that's a professional actor. I mean, really, bro, you're talking about a professional actor.
Thing with him is, I don't know how he's almost like under the radar, just as far as how great he is. He's helping Triple H get over, which he does. Helps The Rock get over, which he does. Having a great feud with Austin, have a great feud with Undertaker. Like, he's kind of like the glue guy where and you can kind of put him in different spots.
And Vince and the relationship with Vince.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, absolutely. And again, bro, that was the beauty of him having these like multiple personalities. But my God, bro, like, man, you probably got a guy coming along, you know, John, maybe once every 10 years that might be able to pull something like that off. I mean, that is so special and such an awesome tool to have in the box, man.
It's funny to think because JR always tells a story that when he first hired Mick, Vince is like, you're going to be upset when I fire him. You know what I mean? Like,
right, you know what I mean?
Like he had no faith in him. And JR was like, trust me, this guy, like JR kind of knows what he's talking about here.
Oh, as far as talent. No doubt, bro. Bro, when JR would hand me the talent roster, I second guessed nothing. I was like, every person on this roster earned the position. I mean, that's how much respect I had for JR and his job. I never questioned why he's a talent on the I did all the time at TNA. I used to go to Dixie all the time and say, so-and-so will never get over. I don't know why you're wasting your money. He will never get over. I never once said that to JR, bro.
So here, obviously, that's the first match in the tournament for the vacated WWF title. We talked about this before. Do you like tournaments as far as like being a part of the whole show? Or
yeah,
because I know you're WrestleMania 4. You're loving that. But
yeah, they're ratings killers. They're ratings killers, bro. Every time you do a tournament on TV. So this is a little different because it's a pay-per-view.
Right.
On TV, they're ratings killings. And I'll tell you why, bro. It's simple to figure and understand. A lot of the matches are cold. They're right. Cold matches in a tournament. There's no story behind it. A lot of people are saying that the Forbidden Door maybe didn't do as well as it could have because there was no build in any of these. Absolutely, bro. And bro, I swear, I'm not going to lie to you, John. There were some times where we were just mentally, physically, emotionally spent, and we booked a tournament knowing, bro, the ratings is going to suck, but we need a break. Bro, tournaments are ratings killers.
So the next match in the tournament, Al Snow with Head, of course, defeated Jeff Jarrett with Deborah. Match only goes about 3 minutes, 30 seconds. Nothing great to write home about here. It's just another continuation in the tournament. Short matches too, kind of. You know what I mean? Like for a pay-per-view, there's going to be more matches in the card. It's going to be shorter matches. So none of them are really that great. Even like going back and watching, only a few matches really stuck out as like being good matches as far as the tournament. Others are just storyline driven, really. I mean, just move it to the next round, to the next round, to the next round.
Yeah, obviously, bro, we're trying to get in more matches than usual. So yeah, that certainly is going to affect the match time.
So the next match, Stone Cold Steve Austin defeats Big Boss Man by DQ. Again, match only goes about 3 minutes, 20 seconds here. Boss Man does some damage, trying to weaken Austin kind of for the next round. But I love Boss Man in the corporation. When he first came in, first of all, he got released from WCW, whatever. But he first comes in, he's under a hood. He's with Vince behind Vince's wheelchair. I was like, that's so cool, though. He should have, like, an enforcer. You know what I mean? He should have somebody to protect his back. And when he revealed his big boss, man, I was like, oh, man, that's perfect. A cool new look and everything.
Yeah, that was it, bro. And that was all him. Like, the cool new look, bro. He really reinvented himself because we all knew the blue shirt.
Yes.
You know, with the nightstick. But then he came back, totally reinvented himself. A new up-to-date look, which was all on him. I thought it was tremendous, bro. I really, really did. I really thought he did a great job for us.
So then the next match, Steven Regal, a.k.a. William Regal, but he was Steven Regal, a real man's man versus X-Pac, ended in a double count, basically a draw here. Match went actually 8 minutes, but no finish. That means Austin will get a bye. He'll advance further. Why the no contest here with Regal and X-Pac? Just saving time here, or why a draw? God.
Man, bro, I wish I could tell you. I don't remember. I would say the reason why there was a draw is if you said that Boss Man was roughing Austin up for his next round, well, if there's a bye because of these two being a draw, Austin's getting over on Vince.
Yeah.
So like Austin's getting one up on Vince, which is pissing Vince off even more. I would probably say that's why we did this, because now you're also giving the audience hope. Like, oh my God, man, Boss Man effed up Austin and now he's got to go wrestle. Well, now there's a bye. So now he's got some breathing room. Now he can get in the trainer's room. So I think that's probably why we did it.
What is up with Regal's gimmick? The real man's man. The theme music is hilarious. Why that gimmick for Regal?
Bro, I swear, Regal was in the mix kind of, I think, before we really started writing. And I don't think we were behind that originally, me and Ed. But yeah, bro, that was difficult because, man, he was really fighting substance issues at that time, and it made it, you know, really, really hard. And that's why I think he wound up, you know, leaving the WWE at that time. But I think the man's man was a creation before, you know, Ed and I really started writing. I think it was something we adopted.
It's one of those things with him that it's almost like a rib. Because he was Lord Steven Regal, member of WCW, you know, he's doing all the British stuff. And then all of a sudden he's a real man's man wearing lumberjack stuff. It like it almost seemed like a rip.
Bro, it could have been his idea too. Like I don't know, bro, because I don't think I was around when he came in, you know, like at
No, he was in WCW while you guys were writing, and then he just came in. So I'm not sure how it came about, but he was pretty much new here at this point.
I would have to think, bro, it might have been something he pitched or came up with. I honestly can't remember, bro.
The theme song, I don't know if you remember, it's hilarious because it's so bad.
Yes.
The steam, hoo-hoo, whatever, like the tugboat.
Yeah, it was sound. The Brawny commercial with the lumberjack.
Yes.
I mean, that's exactly what it was.
Yes. Really bad version of it, yeah. So that match, a double count out. Obviously, Austin would buy the next round. Then we have Ken Shamrock defeating Goldust in the first round, about 6 minutes. Okay match, but that means Shamrock moving on here. Like, in your head with the tournament, is it almost like you're already thinking about the end and just how to get there? Or, like, how do you kind of book a tournament? Or are you really focused in on each match? Like, okay, this needs to happen here. Like, what's the thought process writing it?
Not the match, the big picture. The big picture. Because what you want to create, bro, is – in this tournament, what you really want to create with the viewer or the fan in attendance is you want to get them thinking, if so-and-so wins, we got this next. I mean, that's where you really want to anticipate the excitement. If Shamrock goes over, oh my God, you know what that means, the next match is that's what you really want to create. I mean, if Shamrock goes over and the next match is like a stinker, I mean, you really want to anticipate what that next matchup is going to be.
So here, Shamrock gets the win with the ankle lock, submitting Goldust. Then we have The Rock defeating the Big Boss Man in about 3 seconds. Which is a very, very quick match. Triple H is injured, so Boss Man replaces him. Later on, obviously, we realize that the Boss Man and The Rock are working together. It was a ruse, yeah.
Right.
Is that something creative that you're like, okay, let's give Rock an easy time? We'll tease it to the fans, but nope, because I remember as a kid, didn't pick up on that at all. I didn't pick up on anything.
Exactly. That's what we're trying to do, bro. Throw them way off, way, way off key. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And, bro, I remember it worked to a T because when that turn comes, bro, here's what happened, John, in the building. When it happens, silence. It was like it had to register to the people. Bro, they totally did not see it coming. So when it happened, bro, there was silence in the building. Then there was like a 1, 2, 3, and it was like, oh, shit, you got to be kidding me. That's beauty, bro. Like, booking-wise, bro, that may be a once in a lifetime, but everything was set up to give us that response, including the finish of this match.
So Rock is on his way to the next round. Then the next match is the two guys, almost Hogan, Andre-esque WrestleMania 4. They get to buy, you know, into the quarterfinal. So Undertaker with Paul Bearer defeated Kane in about 7 minutes. You know, okay match here, but it was one of the things where they got to buy because they both beat Austin. They both had their own version of saying, like, oh, I should be world champion. So it's like Hogan and Andre, too, at WrestleMania 4. It's like they got the buy because of what happened before,
right,
prior.
Right, yeah. And again, bro, you're throwing these matches out, and I'm like, oh, my God, bro, these were some really great matches, you know? I'm not talking about technically. I'm talking about storyline-wise. There was a lot to pay money to see here, bro.
Do you think, though, in a way, though, it almost hurts? Tournaments almost hurt because it's like, okay, Undertaker, Kane, that's a WrestleMania match. You know what I mean? Like, Rock, you know, Mankind, like different matches. Do you think that hurts or no?
A lot of people think that, like, you know, you've seen it already.
Right, right.
But, bro, what you've got to do is you've got to create the circumstances where it's just as important again. And, like, we always used to know we'd be able to do that. Like, you know, if we give them Rock and Hunter now, oh, you already gave it to them. Yeah, we understand that. But by the time we're done telling the next story, they're going to really want to see that again. So, yeah, bro, if you keep booking the same match over and over again, which they do in WWE every single week now, it doesn't mean crap. But obviously, bro, through writing, you can make that same match huge again.
Do you think, though, like, as far as just today's writing and stuff, like, if you do the match but you change it, like, isn't that just lazy? It's almost like, oh, let's just keep these guys together in this little ball. Absolutely. Like, there's no expansion.
Absolutely, bro. That's exactly it. Bro, they're eating time. I mean, that's all they're doing today. They're just eating time, and you're seeing the same presentation over and over. Bro, let me tell you something, man. I don't think people realize this. The first 9 shows that Ed and I wrote at WCW, okay? John, it was a 3-hour show. We had no problem writing a 3-hour show with that roster. We had no problem. We weren't extending matches to 15 minutes, the same match week after week after week, because we couldn't come up with 3 hours of content. Bro, when you've got a deep, deep roster, coming up with 3 hours of compelling television should not be an issue.
True. Yeah, it's an issue on Raw. There's no doubt about it. Yep. Yeah. So the next match, Mankind would defeat Al Snow via submission. Match goes about 4 minutes. You know, okay, nothing here, but we're continuing on with Mankind. We think he's the heel. We think he's the bad guy, right? But it's like, oh, he's having his way through a tournament. He seems like the front runner to win because Vince is on his side.
That's exactly it, John. There's so many people at this point that can win it. Yeah, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? There's so many people that can win it legitimately. That's the freaking beauty of it, bro. That is the beauty of it.
And, like, in your head, you're like, okay, Rock's a face, Mankind's the heel, Austin is still there, Undertaker is still in the tournament. Like, that's going to be the final four. Your 4 best guys are going to be in the final four. Yeah. But it's like, you kind of didn't know where they was headed. And then we'll get to it obviously at the end, but and the complete swerve, your favorite, right. Complete swerve. So then the next quarterfinal match is a big rivalry here. It's The Rock defeating Ken Shamrock in about 8 minutes. This was actually a pretty good match. Got some pretty good time. I like this match, but The Rock beats Shamrock. It's almost like he finally slayed his dragon. He finally beat Shamrock. He always had a problem.
And bro, Shamrock really, and there's no doubt in my mind that Rock would not agree with these sentiments. Bro, Shamrock made The Rock. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, bro, I compare it to there were two very big feuds that really helped Austin and The Rock. And I give Shamrock with Rock and, bro, Savio Vega with Austin.
Yeah.
Outside of me, I don't know anybody else that gives him credit for that. But he was such an important cog in making. Austin would tell you that. There's no doubt in my mind, bro. Austin would say the same thing I'm making. You take Savio out of that equation and Shamrock, you're missing such a huge bridge to their success. Shamrock played a huge role in the success of The Rock. No doubt about it, bro.
Here's another little interesting thing with that match. Boss Man comes out, tries to interfere. You think tries to beat up The Rock. He Rock gets the nightstick, hits Shamrock, and gets the win, thwarting Big Boss Man again. So again, another tease that Boss Man screwed up or did something that didn't help Vince McMahon because he was supposed to take out The Rock.
Absolutely.
But Boss Man's really helping The Rock and helping Vince.
Getting The Rock get through this whole tournament and nobody knows it, bro.
Nope. I remember we were watching as a kid. I was like, oh, he screwed up again. Like, oh, man, like Boss Man keeps screwing it up. But he's not. At the end, you're like, holy shit, Boss Man helped Brock win.
You know what it is? It's like, bro, that's so much fun to write. You know what I'm saying? That's what's missing, bro. It's so much fun to write this knowing the fan at home is seeing this a certain way and having no idea what's about to come.
Yep. Definitely unpredictable for sure. Like I didn't see it coming originally at all. Like, well, pretty like you think it's headed in one direction. It's not at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the next match, Sable defeated Jacqueline with Mark Mero, which was a singles match for the WWF Women's Championship. Shane McMahon is out there as the special referee. What'd you think about just in general? It's really nothing to write home about, not a great match, but Sable being the champion, not being really a woman's wrestler, so to speak.
Yeah, no, bro, this was exactly it. I swear to God, this was the thinking behind it. Talk about PR, bro. Talk about promotion. Talk about advertising. Bro, at that time, 1998, I'm a huge Stern fan, and Stern is like red hot. Bro, Stern didn't have wrestlers on the show back then, right. Okay? And in my mind, like, you know, everybody watched Stern. It was the hip thing. It was a cutting edge thing. I knew Stern like laughed at wrestling and I'm like, how would we ever get anybody on that show? And in my mind, I'm like, bro, somebody like Sable, he would give a shit whether she were a wrestler or not. He would have somebody this beautiful on the show. Right. So that's really what I pitched Vince. Like Sable will be able to open some doors PR wise, promotional wise, that maybe some of the guys can't. And like, you know, Stern was the perfect example there with Sable. My God, bro, she was so beautiful and so stunning. And, you know, again, bro, she may have had the opportunity to open up some doors that the guys couldn't. And bro, she wound up being on the Stern show. And it was a great interview, but really, bro, that was really the thinking behind it. It was very much like Arquette, bro. Public relations. You know, back then you didn't have the social media the way you had it today, but you know, public relations and promotion and word of mouth was very, very, very important. So, and bro, I also knew you got to understand. She was married to Mero. So I knew Mark would make her adequate enough to get through short matches. I mean, that's basically all he had to do. And I think both of them did a great job in that role.
Sable equals ratings. There's no doubt about
that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, bro. Like, don't argue with me. Argue with the people.
Yeah, every time she was on, I mean, everybody's paying attention to her. Yeah. Her and Austin were like the two of the, well, obviously Austin number one, but she wasn't far off of being like the number two most popular.
Absolutely, bro. Absolutely not.
So then the next match is the tournament semifinal match. Mankind shockingly defeats Stone Cold Steve Austin here, about 10 minutes, 30 seconds. This was a good match. Love this match. Obviously, Shane McMahon is going to play a little bit of part in interfering and giving, because we thought he was a babyface kind of before, supposedly helping out Austin, trying not to get him fired. And then all of a sudden he turns, gives Austin the finger, and he was really against Austin. So Mankind wins by help from Shane.
That's the whole thing. The whole beauty of this whole night was Vince McMahon's master plan. We are going to F the guy we want to F. And we're going to put the guy in place that we want. And that was Shane's role. So we got to screw Austin first, in order to set up our guy. I hate to put this over, but I wish the writing was like this today. That's why I'm not a fan of the business today. I mean, you see nothing like this today, man.
This was very well done because, again, unpredictable. You didn't see where it was coming. For some of the matches, there's a couple good ones sprinkled in, but it's not great overall. But the storylines and the creative is very, very strong. Right. That's what everybody was kind of lauding afterwards. Like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Like, that was unpredictable as hell.
Yeah.
So then the next match in the other semifinal, The Rock defeated The Undertaker by a DQ in about 8 minutes. Okay match. Nothing crazy to write home about here. Kane kind of tries to interfere, ends up with Rock getting the win via DQ. But again, Rock is kind of each way, you're not really paying attention because you think he's one way he's going to be turning it up. But he's kind of had an easy way, so to speak, through the tournament because he's cheating in every match under the radar, which you don't realize it. Like everything is like working out in his favor.
And, bro, this is the difference today. I was just talking with the Road Dog about this last night, bro. Here's the difference. Bro, when you've got established characters and storylines, okay, finishes of matches can be storyline related. So people can get screwed. People can get DQ'd. Like, the storyline plays into the finish. Well, the difference today is, bro, you don't have that. So, like, everybody loses clean. So you've got a bunch of 50-50 wrestlers, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. And the losses, like, are not storyline driven. They're 1-2-3s. You lost. And again, bro, you can't get people excited behind 50-50 wrestlers. You know, John, going back to the day when King Kong Bundy came into the territory, he never lost. Yeah. Jake never lost. Perfect never lost. Warrior never lost, because by the time they got to the champion, it was like, oh, okay, what's going to give here? Something's got, bro, that goes back to Bruno. When Bruno met his arch rivals, they were untouched. George the Animal Steel. Nobody ever beat George the Animal Steel. And then finally, when he gets in there against Bruno, you're thinking, oh, bro, this is the night. You know, even somebody, bro, on the level of like an Earthquake, he ran through everybody. Now he's got Hogan. Oh, man, this is the night. You don't have that anymore, bro, because everybody's got a 500 record, man. So there's no anticipation like, oh, this is the night Reigns is going to lose. Now he's going in there against the guy that hasn't lost the match, blah, blah, blah. That element is missing, and it all traits back to no characters, no storylines.
Yep. And it's funny, Earthquake would injure Hogan, or Bundy would injure Hogan. It made you even think like, wow, Hogan might lose to this monster. Yep, yeah,
absolutely, man. And and bro, Bruno was the same way when I was growing up. They had you believing, Vince Sr. had you believing, this is the night Bruno's losing the title. Every single month, bro, you believed, oh my God, I've got to watch it. This is the night Bruno's losing. Oh my God, bro. We are so far away from that today. It's unbelievable.
So speaking of Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, the New Age Outlaws, retained their tag titles by defeating D'Lo Brown, Mark Henry, and the Headbangers in a triple threat for the tag titles. Match goes 10 minutes. Nothing great, nothing to write home about here. Almost seemed like it was a bit of a filler before we get to the main event. Do you feel like you needed the tag title match to get it on the card, to get the Outlaws on the card? Because, you know, they're so over. Or do you feel like it should have just been all tournament matches?
No, I think you got to break up the tournament, especially, bro. You got to keep this in mind, especially when you're getting closer to the end, because you got to give the guys a breather.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So definitely, bro, definitely when you have your last two semifinal matches, you've got to have another match just to give those guys a breather.
So here we are with the finals. The Rock defeats Mankind via submission in the tournament final for the vacant WWF Championship. Match goes 17 minutes, 20 seconds. Pretty damn good match. Really enjoyable. Obviously, the finish here with Vince out there, you think that he's for Mankind and all about Mankind, but he's not. As all of a sudden, you know, he's cheating. Shane's cheating. And Rock gets him in the sharpshooter. We have a repeat of last year's Survivor Series 97 with Michaels and Brett in the Montreal Screwjob. Now we have this Screwjob here in St. Louis, the St. Louis Screwjob, as Vince calls for the bell. Mankind never quits, but Rock had him in the sharpshooter. Then we realize, oh shit, wait, what the hell's going on here? Why did Vince just do that? You're confused. Until Vince and Shane go in the ring, they hug the Rock. He's now the corporate champion. Pretty damn good. Pretty shocking, too.
The best thing about this, too, John, was this could have been a catastrophe, because from what I remember, bro, the match is going on. And from what I remember, bro, Boss Man was supposed to hit, I think, Mick with the briefcase. It was Rock and Mick, right? He was supposed to hit Mick. Yeah. And I think Briscoe wound up hitting Rock. But what happened, bro, was the match was going on and I'm watching on the monitor and, bro, like, I see the cue. Boss Man standing right next to me. And I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Bro, like, Boss Man, like, a total brain fart. Like, and bro, this is the biggest angle that we had built for months. And he was like, holy shit. He ran out there as fast as he could. But I think, you know, they called an audible out there. And when, you know, Vince and them realized where the F is Boss Man, I think Briscoe wound up using the briefcase to beat Mick to my, but I could not believe, bro, I think freaking Boss Man was so into the match as a fan that he's watching the match, and here comes his cue, and he's totally brain fart, bro. And I'll never forget that, because that could have been a catastrophe. And right. Bro, that I guarantee you today, that would be a catastrophe, because so much stuff today is every move and everything is scripted, that when something goes awry, like, they don't know what to do. You know, those guys out there, like, as soon as Boss Man did not come, they realized immediately they had to call an audible.
With that match, I mean, it's a good match, but the finish is great. You're just shocked. You're like, wait, what the hell? I thought Mankind was the corporate champion. Then you realize he doesn't fit in with Vince and what he wants for the corporation. Well, the Rock does.
Exactly. How awesome is it that mixed the patsy? Like, yep. He, and so perfect for his character, bro. He thinks he's the guy. This is his night. And he was Lee Harvey Oswald, bro. He was the patsy. But that's what I mean, bro. All because they had such strong characters. Everybody had such an important role in this overall night.
What did you think just overall of the show? Were you happy? Was it a great booking night for you? Were you happy with
bro, very proud. Just very proud of how this was set up. It was set up months before. You know, we knew where we wanted to go, and we kept dropping little hints. Bro, one of my favorite stories of all time, John, and I'm sure I told you this, but bro, I think it was the week before the Survivor Series. where we really wanted to throw people off track. If anybody was seeing this, we wanted to really throw them off track. So I think, bro, the week before, we literally had Rock hit Vince with the people's elbow. And I remember, you know, it was just me and Ed, and we're having that conversation. And, bro, you know, at that point, the people's elbow was built up like Rock was shooting somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
It was built up that way. So I remember, bro, we came up with, okay, bro, we're going to get everybody off the scent. Rock's going to hit Vince with the people's elbow. So, bro, I remember I'm there thinking, and I'm like, Ed, are you sure? Like, isn't that a little too much? And bro, Ed Ferrara just looked at me and said, Vince, it's an elbow. You know what I'm saying? But bro, in the people's mind, when Rock drops an elbow on Vince, bro, he might as well have put a bullet in his head. But right. The reality of it was, it was an elbow. Vince can take an elbow, bro. But that was the beauty of it, bro, because everything was so built that an elbow was like breaking the guy's neck when all it was an elbow, you know?
Yep. It's so funny, like, to think, like, the elbow or even Hogan's leg drop. It's yes, such like a big course. Move, but it is because yes. The guy who's doing it. Yeah,
absolutely, man. I miss that style. I miss the heels. I remember, you know, like before your time too, John, but like Stan Stasiak used to do the heart punch. And bro, the whole match was once he got the guy's hand behind his head like yep. this and like that was the whole match, man. I miss stuff like that, man.
With this show, obviously, I think some of the matches were good, obviously, but not, it wasn't one of those shows where it's like, oh, great matches. It was almost like, wow, great booking. Like the Rock, the Rock is now you have your top heel. The corporation, Vince finally has his top guy. It's felt like, wow, like Vince is like not unbeatable, but it was like, wow, the corporation, shit, like Austin is in trouble. Foley's in trouble. Like he's got his guy and he seems to be in control now. And Vince got the last laugh. But obviously, as the show's ending, Austin comes back out. He beats up Rock, throws him out of the ring, throws the title at him, and then gives Mankind a stunner for good measure, even though he's the face, but Mankind beat him earlier, so serves him right for standing there. He gives him a stunner.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So you give the crowd a little bit of happiness, but you're pissed because you're like, wow, shit, Austin's not champ.
But
Vince got over on him.
But you see, bro, we're looking at that too now. We're looking through Austin's eyes. We're looking at Austin seeing this unfold. Like,
yes, you know, yes.
That's the thing, bro. We made sure everybody was covered, and now Austin got freaking duped. Now he's pissed, bro.
Yep. Very good. And just funny, like, Foley's there. He's pissed. He's just like, you get a stunner too, you know, just because he's pissed. Yeah. And he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't shake his hand and be happy. You know what I mean? The guy beat him earlier in the night.
Oh, my God, bro. I saw that. I saw the clip on YouTube that Ronda Rousey, Liv Morgan. Like, are you freaking kidding me, bro? Like, oh, my. It can't get any worse than that, bro. It can't get any worse. Bro, you've got – she goes through a whole match with Natalya working her leg. Okay, so now the baby face is going to come in when you literally are on one leg. The baby face is going to come in, okay, take 1,000% advantage of your injury.
Yep.
Wrap you up in a small package, and you are an MMA killer fighter, and you're gonna congratulate her. Like it's so horrible, bro, beyond imagination. But bro, that was all done purposely. Ronda's in the doghouse. Ronda must have complained about something, and there's Liv, who will do anything for the company. I'll do whatever it takes you. And that's exactly why it went down the way it did. But people at home, they don't know that. So they're sitting back and they're like, Wait, Ronda Rousey, who I saw knock out 40 women, is now going to congratulate this little pipsqueak who she would have killed if she was healthy? Like, they, you know, people don't see that. So to them, it doesn't make any sense.
I was just laughing because I was like, isn't Liv supposed to be a babyface?
Right.
She's running out there, and now Michael Cole goes nuts. So like everybody's like, oh, what a moment. But she's the babyface, so she came down. Even coming down after somebody injured their knee in a match and they just won, that's a heel move. Then when she had her in the ankle lock, she kicked her in the injured knee. That's the second heel move. She rolled her up and pinned her. I was like, that was why would a babyface ever do that? Wouldn't the babyface say, hey, I'm challenging you for the title at SummerSlam. Here's the briefcase. I'm cashing it in at the show. Like, I'll be cashing in at the show.
Or even, bro, you want freaking ratings. I'm giving you 24 hours.
I'll cash it in tomorrow.
Yep. You do whatever you have to do. You spend all day in the training room. You get deep massage, whatever you got to do. Yes, bro, that's what a baby face would do. Bro, they're so off kilter. It's like whoever, you know, obviously, bro, Vince McMahon is behind all of this. And he's just, bro, I'm telling you, he's battling dementia. I mean, I'm telling you. And the writers underneath him, They've got no clue or concept of wrestling. That like, yeah, bro, that is a heel move. A good guy would not. Rocky Balboa is not going to go in there and challenge Apollo Creed after Apollo box 15 match. You know, but I don't know.
I didn't get that either. I was like, wow, and even the way she pinned her was like very fluky. You know what I mean? Like she shouldn't even be champ. You know?
Just, yeah, that's what I'm saying, bro. That's why I don't watch it anymore, bro. I just got no interest in it, man.
Let's head towards, well, actually, before we head towards the plug, I want to mention just Foley and Mick would go, Foley and Rock would go forward, have a great feud. They have a bunch of matches on Raw, the Rock Bottom pay-per-view, Royal Rumble, the Sunday Night Slam thing with, the Super Bowl. So you had the halftime heat thing. Yep. So they had a bunch of great matches, St. Valentine's Day Massacre. So I mean, they have a feud. And then obviously Austin would have a big feud with Vince, Undertaker mixed in as well. But that's kind of where we're headed to the forward. But let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com, and Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. Vince, what do you got?
Yeah, guys, just check out channelattitude.com. You'll find all my shows and all my content under there. RussosBrand.com, Hameen Media Group, all the shows are under that one umbrella. You can pick and choose what you want. Channelattitude.com.
Nice. Great stuff as always, Vince. Thank you. And thank you everybody out there for listening. We will see you next time here on the podcast. Have a good one, folks.